Hello and welcome to the Intentional Clinician Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Kraus, licensed professional counselor. In today's episode, this is sort of a follow-up to our last episode. I'm going to be speaking with Brittany Deces, LLPC at Health for Life Counseling, about two programs she has recently developed for relationships. And these programs are premarital and commitment counseling for LGBTQIA+ folks and relationship maintenance for LGBTQIA+ folks. So Brittany, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So these programs are unique. We're going to get into these programs and what's going on with them and why people might want to try them out. But before that, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got into developing these programs, but also just let's talk about you first, you in particular. Let's go. What's up with
me,
Brittany?
My favorite subject. as you stated, my name's Brittany and my pronouns are she, hers. I am a queer clinician who also identifies as cis and white. There we go. Why are words hard? And these programs have been really on my heart for a while. And that's, I think, starts from kind of feeling not knowing what my identity was in youth and realizing that the relationships that I had around me, friends, family, teachers, they all kind of informed that. So I think that was my first questions of like, how much do relationships have an impact on people? I went to Milwaukee, Wisconsin for my undergraduate in art therapy. And I still really utilize a lot of my creative arts in a lot of my practice with people. And it also made me question again the impact that we have with relationship to things, the metaphors that we have, the meanings that we bring, and a lot of the way we bring meaning and value to our lives and how we make them is through our relationships. And that kind of segued and led me into doing the program at Western Michigan University for counseling education with the emphasis of marriage, couples, and family. And man, the fire in my gut really got stroked on how impactful attachments, communication skills, relationships. And I also really started to realize that we really don't talk about sexuality and intimacy and gender identity and gender expression, even as part of the program. And I was all like, that is totally not cool. So coming out of that program and working with so many couples and relationship dynamics, I also heard a lot from our community here in Grand Rapids that there isn't very many clinicians that are actually affirming or actually LGBTQIA+ themselves. And a lot of people have had bad experiences with clinicians. And so I really started to take feedback from my queer clients about what they were looking for in relationship counseling and relationship programming. Marriage and commitment has been an ongoing flowing conversation amongst queer folks. But I figured that there is a need out there to make some of those programs. And so I'm really excited to talk to you about them today.
I think that's a lovely introduction. And yeah, all of Brittany's links will be in the show notes, so you can read more about her bio and her background there. She's also EMDR trained. She is huge on learning about intersectionality of cultural identities and connections to peoples and places and environmental things as well. So I'm so glad that you have developed these programs. So, a little teaser about these programs. What could you tell us about these programs? Because I'm sure there might be other programs out there, but I really haven't heard of many in Michigan, especially ones that are culturally specific for LGBTQI plus community. Could you explain a little bit about what would you give us a little bit of a teaser? Yeah.
Some of our teasers. I am countering a lot with our queer folks that a lot of them haven't encountered healthy representation of what a gay, bi, trans, non-heteronormative relationship looks like. And I know a lot of movies, particularly in the 90s, kind of had this vignette of like, okay, you can be gay, but you're going to be dyed at the end of this movie, or you're going to be lonely at the end of this movie. And they're because of that, there's not a lot of examples or ways to communicate about healthy queer relationships. And I think there's a lot of stereotypes that keeps coming up too. Some of the ones that I've heard in my counseling room is that like gay men are, they switch too fast and that they're always chasing tail while lesbians are too fast to go into commitment. There's that like, stereotype of like you go on a first date and you're getting a U-Haul. But again, it's these like jokes and stereotypes that are the LGBTQIA plus folks are constantly fighting against. There's this pressure to, I think, for the queer community to get married, to prove, quote unquote, that their love, that their commitments, that their relationships are important and are sacred. And I think that, unfortunately, even some of our cities across the United States, if not here in Michigan, kind of go from those biases as well. And so I really wanted to create a space for our queer folks to be able to healthily examine their relationship and to improve upon it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think relationships are so pivotal to every community. And having healthy relationships is something that can help your mental health, your physical health, your emotional health. All the studies are saying that, but oftentimes people are aware of, you know, judgments in their communities. And so they'll just work on their, you know, their outside appearance, how I look, how I dress, maybe my stature, maybe my status at work or my profile online, but inside, you know, people are feeling turmoil and chaos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why a lot of people go to individual counseling. But who you're with or who you're wanting to be with is so important to your health. Some facts that I was looking up here. We'll have some of these posted on the show notes as well in the blog. Was a 2017 study on Gottman method couples therapy with 106 gay and lesbian couples further revealed the efficacy of couples counseling in the LGBTQIA plus community. The findings show significant improvements in relationship satisfaction for both the male and female couples after just 11 sessions of therapy. In 2019, system review of the psychotherapeutic interventions for same-sex couples, like the relationship education model and the Gottman method couples therapy, which, you know, are used in relationship counseling, can lead to outcomes such as high satisfaction and improvements in health-related behaviors, relationship enhancement, and substance use issues. And I can't even say these names, but Kusteni and Anagopoulos, 2019. I'm sorry, whoever wrote that study. There's a couple studies there. And so it's so important just for your own health and the health of the relationship. But as you said, a lot of folks in these communities are sort of fighting stereotypes. They're not really sure where they belong. Do they have good examples of a healthy relationship? So let's do a little mini orientation. So why create these two programs? And the two programs again are premarital and commitment counseling, not saying you have to get married for LGBTQIA plus, and of course, relationship maintenance for maybe couples that have been together for a while. Why create this, Brittany?
So one of the first reasons, both as, you know, trying to find my own therapist in this community, as well as hearing from my clients, there is little to no premarital counseling programs or commitment relationship programs designed for our LGBTQIA plus population in the Grand Rapids area. So there's tons of couples, you know, programs. There's a lot of premarital programs that are particularly tied to faith-based institutions, but a lot of queer folks didn't feel welcomed in those places. Mm. And there's also only a handful of therapists or group practices that are trauma-informed and affirming for LGBTQIA plus folks. With the intersectional identities that our queer folks have had and how our history has been laid on the backs of people of color in our queer community, and the trauma and the microaggressions that come with that, I would say, at least in Michigan particularly, there isn't a lot of people that really are affirming and knowledgeable in those things, and they're not ready to confront their implicit biases on those things. And I wanted to provide representation that queer couples and those who may be partnered with someone that may not be straight are also deserving of the same services. There's a lot of this rhetoric that because they're maybe the stereotype is they're not committed or they're living in sin, that these programs aren't meant for them. And I think that's a bunch of hooey. So I wanted to make some programs to cast some of those, that representation for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's a long time coming that we treated people in the LGBTQIA plus community as regular people instead of focusing on, you know, how whatever our opinion is about their personal preferences and sex life and relationship preferences. So I think it's very important because the people in this community are going through their own struggles and in fact, usually marginalized in many ways. So thus, not only having the regular relationship struggles that a couple might have, but also feeling, you know, ostracized possibly in their own community and in the community they live in. So there's a lot of barriers and things that need to be addressed as well. Would you say that sounds okay from my perspective there?
I think so. I think that you are probably one of the only few, I would say, cishet straight men that are really trying to get it and understand. And when you make a mistake, you're not afraid to have those conversations. And so I think what you said there was right on the money.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I think that the thing is that as a person who's has a privilege of not being marginalized in many ways other than maybe my height or something or my skill level, I wasn't marginalized for my gender or you know, my sexuality. I find it important to fight against bigotry and annoying people that are just making this some sort of personal quest. You know, I'm just like, mind your own business. If nobody's bothering you, like, why are you in their business? And also for me, I think I always had friends back in the early 2000s, it was called the gay community, but the LGBTQ plus, I always had friends in that community. And I found those friends were very helpful to me. And I just didn't know much about the community. And I just, that was what I wanted to do, was learn. And so I think there to be an ally, there's a lot to be said on that. That's a whole nother podcast. But honestly, the first step is just being open to those relationships and looking at what messaging maybe you are brought up with. I was brought up with decently negative messaging about anyone who wasn't heterosexual due to religion, which is another whole problem that you can hear my podcast on that. But also in my early 20s, I gained a mentor who had been in a same-sex relationship at that point, but for 25 years when I met him and his partner, and they were very helpful to me on my journey. And that actually helped me learn even more about the community. And I think I want to empower and protect people in that community, but also I want to give permission to all the straight people out there, I guess straight, whatever you want to say, hetero people out there, to learn to, you know, bridge the gap. If you make a friend, this is a learning experience, and really learning and being open is the first step to being an ally. There's many more steps if you want to get involved and help fight for rights and equal treatment and all of that. But really it starts with the relationship and the openness. So I appreciate your comments on that. And I just wanted to kind of put that in there as I get various listeners to this podcast. So any comments there?
I think that relationship is always the first step in finding out who you are, what your ideologies are, what your values are. But I think part of confronting your implicit biases or your prejudice is also doing your own work. So I think, yes, having some of those conversations with your friends and the people that are around you is important, but we shouldn't make that person who is a representative of that population the only contact point for someone else's growth. Like listening to other podcasts, watching docuseries, reading books, that should also be in the mix so that the person who maybe does have a minority status doesn't have the responsibility to be the representation for that entire population. Because I can tell you, like, the way I do queer is probably very different than how someone else does queer.
Definitely. Yeah. And that, and those relationships, I think, were the gateway to me learning more about the communities and getting involved in various groups. And I read a very outdated book, but I've read some updated articles about it. And just, and for me, really, I don't like blatant injustices that make no sense to me. So that was one of the other reasons I became an ally very early on in my, when I was like 18, I was just like, what? Why are people angry about this? Okay. Doesn't make any sense to me. This is absurd. This shouldn't happen in reality. So that being said, I mean, I'm glad we touched on that. For listeners out there who may be from all types of different places, but for the folks who are listening to this, who are like, hey, how do I get involved in this program? Can you explain a little bit why this is different than couples counseling or family therapy, why these relationship programs are?
Yes. So in, I would say, traditional couples counseling or quote unquote regular couples counseling, it's usually a very individualized care. We're really targeting some, I guess, hardcore issues, maybe like PTSD, an affair, domestic violence, depression, anxiety, things like that, where this premarital and commitment program, as well as the relationship program, is kind of shrunken down and put into 8 to 12 sessions. And so no matter what program you're going to be utilizing, even if you were to do quote unquote regular couples therapy, you would be getting 6 skills. And then when we'd be from that point on, from session 7 onward, we would be learning some other different types of things. So we'll be learning things like what does lid flipping, aka fight, flight, freeze, friend, look like in relationships? What does coping skills and co-regulation look like instead of codependency? We'll be learning the communication skills. We'll be learning a little bit more about emotional literacy beyond I feel blank because blank. But some of the things that are directed towards our LGBTQIA plus folks are things like maybe navigating gender roles, implicit biases, social norms, coming out, family dynamics, microaggressions, sex, intimacy, boundaries. What does finances or parenting, religion, politics, all of that kind of go? We wouldn't be able to necessarily hit all of those topics, but in our 8 to 12 programming, but that's where it's really different, is we're targeting certain themes, we're targeting various skills to kind of create a proactive approach instead of a reactive approach, which I guess is what I see most in our traditional couples counseling.
Yeah, and I want to hit on something because I want to talk really soon about the materials you're drawing on and all the research and why these programs can really be positive for people. But I want to really differentiate here for the clinicians listening and the people out there that are just interested. Why couples therapy traditionally is not covered by health insurance, which a lot of people don't realize that and might even actually try to get it, is that health insurance, you can do family therapy, right? Mm-hmm. Because that is based on a problem or a diagnosis. But health insurance currently to this day, now that I've heard rumblings that it may change, is still based on individual coverage, meaning that even if it's a family plan, there must be an identified patient. They have to have some sort of diagnosis, a clinical need. Mm-hmm. And that person is the subject of the counseling. So you could, of course, if you were in a couple, get some type of family therapy, but it's all based on you have PTSD or anxiety or something's going on. The partner's coming in to kind of talk about it or get some ideas, but it's not really that couples counseling, you know, dealing with trust, infidelity, intimacy, sexual compatibility, communications, conflict resolutions, personality differences, family dynamics, value systems, all of those sort of things are cultural things, upbringing issues. All of that is really more of a couple's counseling thing. And and even further, this program that you're working on isn't just like a couple's counseling, right? We talk about family therapy. That's what insurance covers. Couples counseling isn't covered by insurance. This program's not covered by insurance either, because you are making a curriculum. You're making a proactive approach. Instead of waiting for there to be a major problem or a breakup or some sort of huge life-changing altering issue, you're going, hey, let's, if you're thinking about having a commitment or a marriage, let's talk about that. Let's get you ready for that. Make sure you are on the same page. And then also, if you're already in a relationship, every relationship needs maintenance. Okay. Like, it is just, I mean, just like our bodies need maintenance, just like our house or our apartment or a car or whatever, everything breaks down over time if it doesn't have some maintenance, essentially. So can you maybe expound on that a little bit?
Yeah. So I kind of used the example in our last podcast that I was on about how this program is really meant to be the oil change. You know, we want to make sure everything is running smoothly. We have nothing clogged. We have nothing broken. And a good mechanic, aka your therapist, aka me, should be able to direct you. I'm like, ooh, this might be an area of concern. However, if you don't get your oil change, aka maybe not utilize couples counseling or either one of these programs that I have, that we have, that you might have to redo the whole engine because you didn't get your oil change for frickin' ever. And so we are really trying to address what I see as what a lot of couples come to me with skills lacking in. So we're hitting those right away. And I'm also navigating some of the most common themes I see, particularly with the LGBTQIA plus folks, which is some of those that I already named. If any of these are deeper than that, then this program might not be for you, since it's a finite number of sessions, 8 to 12.
Yes, it's got a curriculum, you've got an agenda, but yet it's interactive. There's activities, there's practicing, there's learning, there's a workbook you give people, and you're drawing on materials from all over the counseling spectrum. Can you explain a little bit about the research and literature by Julie Tilson and Joe Court? What's
that? So Julie Tilson is a professor and author in the University of Minnesota. She has done a lot of research on relationship dynamics, queer dynamics, relational structures, and cultural studies. She has a lot of published work specifically for youth who are queer. And then she also has written a book called Queering Your Therapy Space. And so that's one of the sources that I have used and has an impact on me as a clinician. And then Joe Court is actually a Michigan native. And he's also done some work around as author and a has a doctorate. So he's a psychotherapist who primarily focus on queer identities and experiences and sexuality and intimacy. So in the queer realm, those are probably two of my biggest influences, but I'm constantly reading and researching and listening to podcasts. So I'm always learning to make sure that I am up to snuff, as well as, you know, taking feedback from our community here and what they feel is helpful and safe and inviting. Some of the other, I guess you could say, theories that I pull from is the Gottman, Julie and John Gottman's. They've been doing research now for 40 plus years, and a lot of research came out of their love lab where they watched and documented and have quantitative data on what intimacy, friendship, and what makes for good enough relationships, as well as pulling from existential theory, which is all about our belief systems and our values and how we use that to make positive, neutral, or poor behavioral decisions, as well as solution focused, of like what works well and what doesn't. And I really put the emphasis on trying to get that couple or relationship to figure out what they would feel would be appropriate solutions, because I can suggest things all day, but that's not necessarily going to work for everybody. So those are the theories and modalities that I've pulled from to have these programs, that premarital and commitment counseling, or the relationship program, a relationship maintenance program for our LGBTQIA+.
Lovely. Very nice. Thank you so much for talking about that. And I think you've kind of already said this, but this program is specifically tailored for the LGBTQIA+ community. And you have worked hard to make it safe and inviting for that community. So is there anything else you want to say about that? Because I actually feel like you kind of covered this in the beginning. I didn't realize that when I was asking that question. You kind of led with that. That's been your focus, is to make sure it's safe and inclusive. Is there anything, I mean, more to say about that? I'm not sure.
I don't think I have too much more to say on that, other than, you know, to reiterate, I took feedback from our queer folks in at least our Kent County, Grand Rapids area about what they wanted in a therapist, but what they wanted to see in a counseling program. I also, marriage and or levels of commitment has a variety of thoughts, feelings, opinions, depending on who you're talking to and what identifiers that person has. Marriage and commitment are a sticky subject. And so trying to represent both ends of that is a way I'm trying to keep this program safe and inviting, that not everyone wants marriage, and that there are those out there who have been fighting for the right of marriage. And so really honoring everyone's individual journey in that, I felt was really important. And as always, that trauma-informed lens of really paying attention to those intersecting identities, those inequalities, the stigma, the prejudice in our history has been so important. Not that, you know, it's more important than anybody else, but I think it's a history often forgotten.
Yes. Thank you for saying all that. I feel like you're really explaining this quite well. But I want to hear a little story. I know that you changed the names of this couple, yes, but maybe you could tell us a little story about, maybe something that inspired this program.
Yes, I love to tell you. Yes, names have been changed. But as we were kind of note-taking and stuff, Paul, I was thinking about Mary and Becca. They were a couple in their 20s, and they met through friends who were often going dancing and going to drag shows and drag bingo. Like, they were a very extroverted couple. Like, if you saw them, you saw them with people. They really hit it off and decided to move in together after about 6 months of dating. And they realized almost every time they were together before that point, they were with friends. So when they moved in together, they were kind of like, oh, now what do we do? Because we've never actually been with each other alone before. Becca described their chemistry as hot shit, but found themselves often fighting. But I think that was, in Becca's eyes, part of like the charisma and the charm and the chemistry. Mary describes that although they were she really didn't like the fighting, but the making up part was great. So catch my drift there. She realized though that their dynamic of these really passionate moments, whether it was fighting or otherwise, wasn't going to make a lasting committed relationship, and they needed to find another way to resolve their conflicts. So they found many of the skills to be really useful. Some of them, you know, like the Gottman communication method and emotional literacy. But the one that really stuck for them was that assumption checking. Paying attention to the story they tell themselves and making an assumption about their partner or about the behavior, which is a skill we kind of go in like session 5, session 6. And by the end of the program, they were both joking, but they were also very wonderfully communicating and, you know, doing those assumption checks instead of being buttholes to their partners in their brains.
Yes, I love that. I love assumption checking skills. I can't emphasize enough if a couple hasn't learned that skill. It is so amazing how close you can get if you work on both checking your assumptions about what the other person meant or what they're, you know, meaning to do or whatever weird thing you've got going on in your mind. Mm-hmm. We're off almost always wrong. And that's why it's important to learn that skill, which I can't go into the skill right now because that'd be a whole nother podcast. But,
well, you can always invite me back, Paul.
Of course. Yes, absolutely. To go over it. But so when I learned that skill, my relationship improved greatly when I was in my 20s. I would actually have you do all the skills, but then, you know, we need it's, I feel like you can get information from a podcast, right? But you can't get a full, you can't really apply the information, right? It's kind of like, I'm hungry, so I'm going to go to that grocery store that gives you all the free samples of pretzels and cheese and fruit, and I'm going to walk around a bunch, but it's not really like filling me up. It's not a real full meal. So
you haven't bought the pretzels and the cheese and the meats for later.
Correct.
You don't know how to warm them up and to make them.
And everyone's on their own journey. So, I mean, you know, sometimes couples, they need to just do the cheapest option available. They just grab a book from the store, right? There's books on relationships that are great all over the stores right now, or listen to a podcast or watch a documentary. But I do think for the couples that are really ready to make a significant change, the best part about your program is that it's time limited and you have all these different options, because it's about you empowering and enhancing their skills and their love so that they can go out and just have a lot of fun. And so then, mm-hmm. and also avoiding these sort of like massive disputes that people kind of like hold in their feelings. And then they don't really, you know, finally comes out, you know, and there's some issue. So let's talk about what you get with this program. Obviously we know it's tailored to LGBTQIA. We have the other programs on the website. You can already look at the podcast number one, and we're gonna have a third podcast coming out later about the other relationship programs. You can find them on our website, but can you talk about, you know, just a little bit about what they get through this?
Absolutely. So each couple or relationship structure will be getting a booklet that will kind of guide them through the initial six skills. So they will get a tangible, touchy physical copy, as well as a PDF, just in case there are couples or relationship structures that need to do online programming. So with that, they'll get that. We'll be doing lots of hands-on stuff with that booklet in mind. Depending on their level of investment, will be a range of different costs and different structures. So regardless on if you choose level one, level two, or level three, you're going to get six basic skills. So if you're going for level one, it's going to be eight sessions. So what that means is it's going to be an introductory, your six skills, and then a closing session. For our level two, you're going to get 10 sessions. So you're going to get an introductory, the six skills, and then two additional sessions that are directed assessed to be an area that couple or that relationship wants a little bit more focus on. And then when we have our level three, that's going to be 12 sessions, which again is going to be one introductory, six skill building sessions, and then four sessions directed on a common relational topic, plus that closing session to make sure everything's all wrapped up in a bow. Clients can opt out for more sessions on that, but that'll just be an additional cost.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love how they know what they're getting, and it's time limited and it's focused. And obviously people could try, you know, a la carte or something, or go to a couple, you know, different person or whatever for specific issues. But I think that really lays it out, and you get discounts for sort of paying up front and things like that as well. I feel like this really lays it out. And of course, how do they find out about it? They can just head to the website. We're going to be in the show notes. We'll have each program described in even more detail than we discussed on the podcast in a written format condensed on the healthforlifegr.com website. That's www.healthforlifegr.com. And of course, you can call the office at 616-200-4433. And we have a front desk person who answers the phone 5 days a week. and a backup as well. So you should be able to get through to somebody. You can send in a contact form. Brittany's profile is on the website. We're going to put that in the show notes as well. And send us some questions if you've got questions. Ah, that's right. I forgot. So obviously you have an office, you see people in person, but
I do.
What about those folks who may not be in Grand Rapids or in the surrounding communities who can't come see you in person? Would you take them on through some sort of secure video telehealth?
Absolutely. I do take people and see clients through telehealth. I use a HIPAA compliant platform. What I tell some couples, though, is that just might make our activities a little different or a little challenging. I might ask them to, you know, remember to bring crayons and paper next time, because usually I can just pull those out and utilize them in my office. So I absolutely do see couples and people online as long as their permanent residence is the state of Michigan, because that is where I'm licensed only.
Wonderful. All right, Brittany, I really appreciate your time and thank you so much for putting these programs together.
Yes, thank you for having me. I had a blast talking about them.
Me as well. Take care now.
We got married in a fever, hotter than a pepper sprout. We've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out. I'm going to Jackson. I'm going to mess around. Yeah, I'm going to Jackson. Look out, Jackson Town.
Go ahead and wreck your health. Go play your hand, you big talking man, and make a big fool of yourself.
Yeah, so what if I do?
Yeah, go to Jackson. Go comb your hair.
Oh, honey, I'm gonna snowball Jackson.
And there you have it. This has been another episode of the Intentional Clinician Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please share it with people you know. I would surely appreciate it. Or take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. As most of you know, I am passionate about preventing future violence in the United States. My colleagues and I have started a nonprofit called the National Violence Prevention Hotline, a 501c3. Organization. We are endeavoring to gain funding and collaborators so that we can start a 24/7 hotline and chat line to reach potential perpetrators before they act violently. It is a bold effort to save lives and curb violence by working to connect with potential offenders while they are in the planning stages of violence, help to de-escalate them, and provide resources so that they can get appropriate professional help. The National Violence Prevention Hotline is looking to open up a conversation about violence in society, the causes, and the solutions. You can learn more by visiting our website, www.violencepreventionhotline.org. Join us online by signing our petition on the website, sharing the website with your network of people, donating to the cause if you like, and you can now even write your congressperson from our website with a simple form. I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you are a therapist looking for ethical and excellent medical billing services, check out therapistbillingservicesllc.com. That's www.therapistbillingservicesllc.com. Billing services created by therapists for therapists. If you're looking for an EMDR International Association consultant, I am a consultant and I can provide you the 20 hours you need to become EMDRIA certified. I have groups online and in person, and I do individual consultation. Just send me a message at the website and I'll get back to you. If you want to get trained in EMDR therapy, check out the great training opportunities with EMDR Training Solutions. I've worked with them before and they are phenomenal, so register today. If you are in need of counseling, do not hesitate to make an appointment at a local counseling center in your area. You can also make an appointment with the excellent clinicians in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area at Health for Life Counseling and the Trauma Informed Counseling Center of Grand Rapids by visiting www.healthforlifegr.com. The recording you just listened to consists of the personal opinions of Paul Krause and his guest, and while these are based on the literature they have read and the experience in their fields, this should not be viewed as a definitive opinion on any subject. Listening to this podcast is not a substitute for treatment. If you're in a crisis, please dial 911 or the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988. You can also text 741741 and a live trained crisis counselor will respond. Did you know you could support your local bookstore by shopping at www.bookshop.org? You can order from the comfort of your own home online while supporting local brick-and-mortar businesses near you. If you are a therapist and you are not a member of your national or local therapy organizations such as the American Counseling Association or the American Mental Health Counselors Association, please get involved. At least pay the dues. It will help the lobbyists in our field keep us from becoming gig workers. And of course, there's the bonus of increasing mental health education around the United States and helping people understand what counseling is and promoting best practices within our profession. Until next time, I wish you all a safe and peaceful week.
Not while I've got breath in me. Try.